Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. A warning from Kenya's president to terrorists following yesterday's deadly attack.
Multiple security efforts are underway to detect, deter, disrupt, and defeat any terrorist operatives or groups.
And Kenyan relatives still searching for missing loved ones several hours after the Nairobi attack.
A friend of theirs, she managed to come in. Then she rang the sister and told the sister, you better come back, come in. News is not very good.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Kenyan leaders from the government and the opposition warn they will hunt down terrorists who attacked an upscale hotel and office complex in Nairobi yesterday. President Uhuru Kenyatta confirms 14 people were killed in that attack. John Tanza has this report for VOA from Nairobi.
President Uhuru Kenyatta addressed the nation hours after the attack at the Suite D2 Hotel in Westlands, an upscale suburb of the capital Nairobi.
Multiple security efforts are underway to detect, deter, disrupt, and defeat any terrorist operatives or groups. We are also on highest alert and shall remain so. I assure every Kenyan and our foreign visitors that you are safe in Kenya.
Wednesday morning, Secretary of Interior Fred Matiang'i told reporters at the scene of the attack that phase one of the police operation is over. He declined to comment on the number of attackers killed.
This is a security operation and it's going on. When a security operation is going on, as a rule of thumb, you cannot start running sideline comments when it is going on. We have been able to take out all the attackers who came here, and that is it for now.
The Islamist militant Al-Shabaab, based in Somalia, has claimed responsibility for the attack. Authorities have not confirmed that. However, Al-Shabaab has been linked to previous attacks in Kenya, apparently in retaliation for Kenya's support of the Mogadishu government. An official with the Kenyan Red Cross told reporters that 18 people were injured and around 700 were evacuated from the Desute complex on Tuesday. The attack began with an explosion, and then there were 3 hours of gunfire as police worked to clear the complex. The president says the objectives of the police operation was to rescue those trapped in offices, hotel rooms, and other facilities.
The operational priority of the security services was first and foremost to safeguard civilian life. They acted swiftly to contain the attackers and methodically evacuate those whose lives were at risk.
The Kenyan president warned his government is launching an aggressive manhunt for all those involved in the attack.
I convened and chaired a meeting of our National Security Council, and I want to say this. We will seek out every person that was involved in the funding, planning, and execution of this heinous act. We will pursue relentlessly wherever they will be until they are held to account.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga echoed that warning.
All indications are that as a nation, despite persisting challenges with regard to securing our homeland, we are learning and getting wiser and better with every unfortunate attack. Our goal must remain the ability to completely keep these forces of evil out of our borders and weeding them entirely out of our midst.
Most of those killed were Kenyan citizens. The U.S. State Department has confirmed one American citizen was among the 14 people killed, and Britain's Foreign Office said a British man also died. John Tanza for VOA News, Nairobi.
While Kenya's president says the suspected terrorist attack on the hotel is over, the Kenyan Red Cross says dozens of people are still missing. Some families spent hours looking for loved ones yesterday, only to find their worst fears confirmed. Mohammed Yusuf has the details.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has announced the suspected Al-Shabaab terrorist attack on a Nairobi hotel complex is over. But the Kenyan Red Cross said Wednesday that dozens of people are still missing. Some families spent hours looking for loved ones on Tuesday, only to find their worst fears confirmed. After a 19-hour siege on the Dusit D2 hotel and office complex, President Kenyatta said the attack was over.
The security operation at Dusit complex is over, and all the terrorists eliminated. As of this moment, we have confirmation that 14 innocent lives were lost through the hands of these murderous terrorists, with others injured.
The president said Kenyan security forces had killed all the four attackers and 700 people were rescued. A few hundred meters from the scene of the attack, families, relatives and friends of those who lost people gathered to identify the bodies. Margaret Ojo spoke of frantic effort made by her daughter and some friends to find Ojo's niece, who was trapped in the hotel complex. In the end, her daughter had to inform the niece's family that she had been killed.
She was going back home now because she had given up. They could not be allowed to come. But a friend of theirs, she managed to come in. Then she rang the sister and told the sister, you better come back, come in. News is not very good. Your sister is here. So she came back and found her sister there, dead.
Yasin Jama suffered the loss of two nephews who worked for Adam Smith International, an international government consulting company that has offices in the Dusit D2 complex. I have lost two boys. One got married the other day, he said, and they both started working at the international agencies. But unfortunately, we have lost them. The company said Abdallah Dahir and Faisal Ahmed were killed on the terrace of restaurant in the complex. It says both men had worked on the Somalia Stability Fund, a project to bring peace and prosperity to Somalia through various community initiatives. Jama said he could not understand the motivation of Al-Shabaab, the group that claimed responsibility for the attack. The ones who brought this pain to me are carrying our name, Islam. I'm also a Muslim. The question I'm asking, why are they killing human beings? The Islamist extremist group has carried out several other killing sprees in Kenya, including the 2013 Westgate Mall attack that left 67 people dead. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenyan nationals living in Juba say they were extremely sad to hear about the attack. A Kenyan businessman in South Sudan's capital believes Kenya is no longer safe, given people are attacked in broad daylight. Winnie Serino has more on that story for VOA from Juba.
Kenyan businessman Boyo Otieno says he recently sent his daughter to one of the schools in Parklands, a neighborhood not far from the Dusit Hotel. He says he is worried about his daughter's safety and those of other school children. Otieno wonders how a capital city with organized security organizations could be attacked too easily during the day, and he fears that other Kenyan towns may come under attack by terrorists because there are fewer security personnel deployed there.
I feel like we are not safe everywhere. If you can be attacked at the capital of Kenya, Nairobi, with people welding AK-47 in the broad daylight, so how does somebody who is staying in Mandera feeling? Somebody in far northeastern Kenya, which is people normally tend to think that the security apparatus is not very good compared to Nairobi.
Philip Mangula, another Kenyan national living in South Sudan, says minutes after learning about the attack from social media, he contacted his family in Nairobi, who say they were safe but were frightened. Mangula appeals to the government to enact strict immigration laws, especially for foreigners who intend to stay in Kenya for many years. He says he believes some immigrants migrants use the duration of their stay to plan attacks on Kenya.
Our government is spending a lot of money paying the intelligent people who are supposed to do their work accurately. They have to inspect visitors who are coming. Visitors have to register where they came from, where they are going to, and where they stay, so that we should be having a safe country.
Kenyan national Abdulaziz Abdullahi says he heard many people were injured and more than a dozen were killed. Abdullahi says he fears such attacks will hurt the Kenyan economy by scaring away investors.
The innocent people are dying there. That is not accepted in our religion and in our country. We are in hardship. We are fighting corruption. And then these attacks also make the economy go down. And that is what we don't recommend. We want Kenyans to be united. We want everyone to fight these people.
Kenyan national Ruth Wansoka in Juba says she called some friends back home who told her some school children were stranded in schools because of several roadblocks near the hotel.
If the president, our president, can go do something on what happened yesterday, because it's not the first time, and we Kenya now, we are suffering. We lost our friends, children. Also, this is affecting our children for studying.
Joseph Shangashia, another Kenyan national living in South Sudan, says he is tired of terrorist attacks in his country. He says the government should be better at screening the nationalities of those involved in the current and previous attacks and should have banned them from coming to Kenya. He says other towns may be attacked if proper security measures are not put in place.
The people who did that must be found out, and the government must do it, because we are really suffering. We don't know whether and at what time other town will be attacked, because it is now serious. It has become common in Kenya, and this is not good. If there are a certain clan or tribe or certain people from a certain country, they must be eliminated from Kenya, because we are tired of it.
Kenya's president warned his government will hunt down terrorists on Kenyan soil. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Intelligence officials and analysts say Al-Shabaab, which claimed responsibility for the attack, might have had several objectives. A major one would have been the militant group's demand that Kenya withdraw its troops from Somalia. The high-profile attack carried the hallmarks of Al-Shabaab: detonation of explosives followed by suicide fighters. A claim of responsibility came as gunshots were still being fired. And there was the usual exaggeration, with Al-Shabaab claiming its fighters killed 47 people, compared with the official death toll of only 14. It also was a symbolic day. January 15th is the third anniversary of the biggest Al-Shabaab military attack on African Union troops in Somalia. The attack on a military base reportedly killed about 140 Kenyan troops. Rashid Abdi, regional director of the International Crisis Group, spoke with VOA's Haroon Maruf. He says Al-Shabaab wants to pressure Kenya to change its strategy in its neighbor.
There's no doubt that Kenya's military presence in Somalia constitutes the biggest strategic threat to Al-Shabaab.
Kenya has troops serving as part of the African Union mission in Somalia, along with Ethiopia, Djibouti, Uganda, and Burundi. Abdi says the deployment of Kenya forces in three regions that are strategic to the group, Lower Juba, Middle Juba, and the Gedo regions, threatens Al-Shabaab. Nonetheless, Abdi doubts that Kenya will give in to Al-Shabaab.
And I think the deployment of Kenyan troops there has significantly, I think, impacted Al-Shabaab's ability to move around. So Al-Shabaab would like to put pressure on Kenya to pull out its forces. And these kind of attacks, especially in Kenya's urban heartland, are designed to foment public backlash against the Kenyan government so that the Kenyan troops are withdrawn.
Somali officials in Lower Juba region have recently announced military operations against Al-Shabaab to retake that town Bwali, the capital of Middle Juba region, the only region in Somalia that Al-Shabaab entirely controls. Al-Shabaab has carried out two previous high-profile attacks in Kenya. The attack on the Westgate Mall in 2013 killed 67 people, while the attack on Garissa University in February 2015 killed nearly 150. Al-Shabaab also has used bombs to target Kenya military and police, killing dozens. But Kenya also made significant progress in improving intelligence and counterterrorism, and Kenya foiled what would have been an attack last February. But Abdi says Al-Shabaab never lost the intention to attack Kenya.
You know, Kenya was making progress in the counterterror campaign. However, I think the problem has always been also vigilance. You know, it is difficult to be vigilant all the time. And this is what Al-Shabaab always exploits. You know, after 4 years of without an attack, you know, people become complacent and think that the terror threat is gone. And I think this is the weakness which Al-Shabaab exploited to conduct this attack.
The United States military carried out 47 drone strikes against Al-Shabaab last year and 5 so far this year. But Al-Shabaab still controls vast territory in the countryside and likely will continue to plot more terror attacks. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudan military chiefs have a warning for rebel groups who refuse to sign the revised peace deal. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in which way are you most like your parents?
In my physical appearance, I'm most like my dad. I do not really look like my mom. She talks a lot, but I also don't like talking.
I look very much like my dad, and I speak like him too. But as for my mother, I don't resemble her at all, but I love her anyway.
I'm like my dad when it comes to giving orders, like leading. And then when it comes to my mom, I'm like her when it comes to cooking, because she has good cooking skills.
Like my character. People say I'm like my parents when it comes to character. Like the way I behave, the way I socialize, it's just like the way my parents do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Military chiefs from the government and SPLA-IO are both threatening to use military force to end the activities of the holdout group National Salvation Front, which is led by General Thomas Cirillo. The chief of staff of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the SPLA-IO's deputy chief of general staff say they consider NAS a threat to the revitalized peace agreement. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
General Gabriel Geokriak, chief of staff of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, and Lieutenant General James Kwong Chol, the deputy chief of general staff of the SPLA-IO, took part in a joint defense board meeting in Juba yesterday to discuss implementing security arrangements as is stipulated in the revitalized peace deal. Lieutenant General Chol emerged from the meeting to say his group is skeptical about the intentions of holdout groups like Cirillo's NAS.
Cirillo is not a big threat, but it's a big threat because we are for peace. And we're seeing that this time is a time for peace, and all of us, we have to abide by the peace because of the situation in the country. And that's why we are urging the international community, and we are urging also our citizens to talk to Thomas Cirillo to come to the peace side. It's not a big threat in terms of the forces. It's not a big threat. But it's a threat because it's out of peace. And that's why we are urging people that he has to join the peace.
South Sudan Army Chief of Staff General Riak appealed to the international community to pressure Cirillo's group to stop fighting.
In military nature, force is a threat to the peace and to the agreement, and especially to the people and their properties, and which is the tranquility of the people of the area. And because it's denying them access, it's abducting them, it's looting them, it's maiming them, it's raping them, and that one is causes a lot of problems to the human living.
Riak urges South Sudan's international partners to use a diplomatic approach to bring Cirillo to the negotiating table and accept peace. He says if Cirillo fails to embrace dialogue, the government and SPLA-IO will launch military attacks on the group.
When things become to an unabated situation, should he not listen? We cannot just stand aside and watch while he's doing what he thinks to be for his benefit.
Mawa George, Executive Director for the local civil society group Community Empowerment for Rehabilitation and Development, says launching military attacks on Cirillo's group could cause more misery for ordinary people living in NAS-controlled areas.
We need to continue to find more ways of engagement, you know, dialogue, and making sure that we are able to address the issues that are of contention. If there are issues, I mean, the table is always there. People can sit down and discuss. I think military approach may not be a good option as for me, because it will affect the civil
society. George calls on SSPDF and the other parties to continue engaging whole art groups in a dialogue so that all can join the implementation of the peace agreement, which he says will allow millions of South Sudanese living in IDP and refugee camps to return home. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Returning South Sudanese refugees and internally displaced persons in Ye County of Ye River State say they are finding it pretty difficult to return home to their villages. Some say their houses are being occupied by others. At the same time, local leaders are trying to reassure returning refugees and IDPs that they will be able to access their old houses and businesses. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Ye.
Since South Sudan's warring parties signed the revitalized peace agreement in September, thousands of former refugees and IDPs have been returning to Ye River County. Banja Joel returned from a refugee camp in Uganda to Ye Town last week. Banja says when he was in the camp, some people told him the situation in Ye had improved tremendously, but he says that's not the case.
Being a returnee, I mean, when you come, you see someone with a gun, you find out like this person is coming to kill you. So in the night, you don't even really have peace of mind. You know, by then, South Sudanese pounds has value. But now, currently, when you see right now, it has actually devalued. So you find 1,000 pounds is just like buying a bottle of water. You know, there are very many South Sudanese who are really eager waiting to come back home. So I'm appealing to the government really to make sure these people leave the houses of both, so that by the time when they come, they just have to enter into their families.
Banja says implementing the revitalized peace agreement is the only way to restore lasting peace and stability. Ross Tabo, a mother of three, returned from Rhino refugee camp in Uganda's West Nile region a few weeks ago. Speaking in simple Arabic, Tabo says she too is finding it hard to begin a new life in the area since her house was set ablaze during the fighting in 2016.
We returned safely to Ye Town, but we are finding it difficult to settle in our previous residence. Our houses at Wulaturu area have been burnt down, and we are currently settling in other people's houses. We are calling on the government to restore total peace so that we can go back and settle in our old locations.
Ye resident Susan Faida is occupying a house in Ye's Gabat neighborhood, whose owners fled the area at the height of the conflict. Faida says she took over someone else's house after fleeing insecurity in her village of Kanjoro in 2017. Faida says she's ready to vacate the house, but urges local officials to improve security across the county so that she too can return to her home.
I welcome the returnees back to their homes so that we will live happy together. I was displaced behind Kanjoro area, and that is where I was residing before. My appeal to the government is the security guarantee for us and those who are returning from Uganda and DR Congo to live in peace and harmony.
Moses Mabe, coordinator for the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Ye River County, says by December last year, his office had registered more than 13,000 South Sudanese returning from Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. He says a majority of the returnees have no access to food and shelter. Mabe is urging local officials and humanitarian organizations working in Ye River State to help the returning refugees.
For last year statistics, we have received 9,012 households, and population is 13,181. This is from Uganda. Then from Congo, we have households 2,931, and population is 4,072. They need to be helped. And you cannot stay here for 4 months, 5 months, minus your house is not there, your samba is not there. So I'm appealing really to the non-governmental organizations. We need emergency response by them. More special food and general basic needs so that they'll have that courage of starting life.
Speaking in simple Arabic, Ye Municipality Deputy Mayor Kemis Noah Kisanger is advising the returnees to report directly to area community leaders to enable local leaders help them resettle.
If the owner of the house returns home, he or she should report to the area chief so that the occupant is given 7 to 15 days. And this also applies to the soldiers occupying civilian houses, to vacate the house without any problem. For those returning, the security situation is good. And in case if there is any facing security concerns, he should report to the mayor or to the deputy or any other local authority. And this issue can be traced up and addressed immediately.
Rafael Njirasa Buni, the chairperson for Yeh River State Peace Commission, says all residents, including returnees, should reconcile and forgive one another.
We are all South Sudanese. We belong to this nation. And it is only the current situation that forced us, you know, to be in this situation. So my appeal is that let them embrace one another, let them coexist. Until the situation improves, then they can go back to their respective places or areas where they come from. And especially now that peace has been signed, this is the time we should even talk about this peace.
Local leaders say they are aware of disputes between returnees and IDPs over land. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yeh.
Finally, Gabon President Ali Bongo is back home nearly 3 months after reportedly suffering a stroke while on a visit to Saudi Arabia. Bongo's return appeared at least partly aimed at tamping down rumors over his health and growing questions about his ability to lead the country. Last week, the government quashed a coup attempt when soldiers took over state radio. Two of those soldiers were killed and four others were arrested. Bongo returned early yesterday. He then appeared on state television for a ceremony swearing in new cabinet ministers. Economy Minister Jean-Marie Ogandaga called his presence a sigh of relief for the economy. In a wheelchair, Bongo could be seen smiling and chatting, but he made no statements during the ceremony, and there was no sign of movement of his right arm, which was immobile during a taped New Year's address broadcast nationwide across the country. Bongo succeeded his father as president in 2009. Together, the two men have ruled the country for more than 50 years. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Shake Your Body by Isaka Number One. Shake your body, let's dance together. Shake your body, let's dance together. Shake your body.
Shake your body, move your body. Shake your body, move your body. Shake your body, move your body.
We've been listening to Isaka Number One with the song Shake Your Body, and some of us in the studio have been dancing, not saying who. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for making us a part of your evening. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Number one.